there is not room for us to worry about what someone else might or probably are not thinking. I just had to put one foot in front of the other and show up in a way that felt good to me.
Welcome to The Optimistic Artist. I'm Monique Story, artist, creative entrepreneur, and whiskey enthusiast. I'm deeply passionate about helping artists find their possible by bringing the clarity, strategy, and inspiration you need to turn that art hobby of yours into a thriving art business. After many sold-out collections, I've learned a thing or two about marketing art whilst also thriving as a mum and creative. Marketing tips, productivity hacks, artist mindset, finances, failure, family, we cover it all as you hear from myself and other experts in the field. Whatever creative dreams you've got hidden in your heart, I am here to tell you it is possible. So get ready, my friend. This is The Optimistic Artist.
If you follow me on Instagram, you would have seen the journey of my recent solo show. Since that show, I've had so many questions. So in today's episode, I'm going to break down my whole process of the solo show. I'm going to talk about how did that solo show come about. I will talk about all of the things I had to think about in the planning process. I'm going to spend a decent amount of time talking about how I marketed the show and my work. And I'm going to answer the question that a lot of people have been asking me, which is, was that worth it for me? I'm going to break down my pricing structure, how much money I made, and why it was absolutely worth it for me to have this solo show. So let's jump into today's episode. So quick recap of the show. The show was called What the Tide Brings In. It was a solo show. I had about 28 pieces in the collection, and it was deeply rooted in narrative and story. And it was my first full show that included augmented reality. If you're not sure what augmented reality is, make sure you head on to my Instagram page because I've got some examples there of what it looks like. But essentially what it means is that each painting was a standalone piece on its own, but when you held your phone over the painting came alive. So each painting animated, whether it was a boat sailing across the water or someone swimming across the canvas, each painting had a layer of animation over top of it and it had its own soundscape. So this was an augmented reality show. It went for about 2.5 weeks. And I'm going to share with you my whole process from planning to pricing to marketing to what happens after the show. Some of my absolute highlights from the show was, first of all, being able to see people interact with my work in real life. My last 6 collections have all sold online independently. So I've really missed out on that human one-to-one interaction. So being able to be in the gallery, watch people, appreciate the work, being able to see their faces when they saw the augmented reality component, when they heard the soundscapes was incredible. And see people moved by my work was just such an incredible privilege. Saw people literally just crying because a painting and the meaning behind that painting spoke to them that much. The in-person element of the show was definitely a highlight for me. The next highlight for me was being able to bring all of who I am as a creative to the show. Because yes, I am a painter, I'm an artist, but I also love imagery. I love storytelling and I love poetry and I love cinematography and I love technology and I love curating a space and music. So using the augmented reality was an incredible way for me to show up with all of who I was as a creative. I just absolutely loved that part. Working with a team and collaborating with a lot of creatives was another highlight for me because I'm so not used to it. I'm so used to working completely on my own. I do all the marketing, the pricing, the shipping, the customer service, the everything, right? So having these touch points with other people in the industry was amazing. Because I think at the heart of who I am, I still really love community. So I loved right from the drink sponsor and being able to make that connection to Samuel, who did all my videography, to learning from the curator, to the people walking in and out of the gallery, to talking to the staff, asking advice about pricing and catalogs. And I just loved that there were so many different touch points with different people, because everybody has their zone of genius. So the more we engage and the more we are living in community, the more we can learn from people and their genius. So that was another part of working with a gallery and doing the solo show that I absolutely loved. If you're listening and thinking, oh man, that sounds like something I would really enjoy, but I have absolutely no idea where to even think about beginning to think about working with a gallery, I just want to tell you that you are not on your own. That was 100% me. I had no idea where to even begin to approach galleries. I'm not going to go into that too much, but I will link in the show notes to a previous episode where I talk about my approach, how I approach galleries, and the things that I did that I really believe contributed to me getting the gallery experiences that I've had. So I will link to that episode in the show notes. But this particular show, I just got a phone call. So I got a phone call from the gallerist offering me a solo show. And to be honest, it kind of completely threw me off guard and I wasn't quite ready for it. And I think the lesson that I learned here is that just be faithful in honing your craft and building your business and crafting your story and just showing up, because you never know who's watching. You never know who is paying attention to your dedication, to the quality of your work, to your storytelling. Just keep going. One thing that I will add here is that I was really clear on who I was as an artist. I had spent a lot of time clarifying my story, clarifying what is it about my work that is unique, that sets it apart. What is it about my approach to my practice that makes me unique and would make me a good fit for a gallery? So one of those things was that I knew my work was interactive. I think that was something that the gallerist was really interested in. They were interested in the augmented reality side of things. They were drawn to the idea of creating an interactive experience. So that was something that set me apart. And I will say that it's worth thinking about your journey and discovering what makes you unique. Now, you might know straight away, like, oh, yeah, I'm that artist that does hyperrealism, or I'm the artist that takes recipes and turns them into paintings. Or you might not know yet. And that's okay, because it's not something that you can force. But in your journey, just be aware about discovering what it is that sets you apart. It goes a long way in making you stand out to a gallery. Whatever it is that sets you apart, it just needs to be authentic and joyful to you. Off the top of my head, a couple of examples that I can think of is that there's an artist here in Sydney called Cassandra, who essentially takes songs and turns them into paintings. So she creates paintings in Morse code that tap out the lyrics to songs and matches colors and patterns to them. It's really unique and it really sets her work apart. I will definitely link to her work in the show notes, because I think it's a really good example of someone really clarifying who they are, what is it that sets them apart, what makes their work unique, and it really helps them to find their audience. So Cassandra is a great example of that. Another one that I can think of, oh, I cannot remember this artist's name, but I will go and research it and put it in the show notes. She takes recipes and turns those recipes into paintings, these beautiful abstract paintings, and they are so beautiful. For me, I've always loved creative communication. I love the combination of movement, cinematography, sound, poetry. And so I use augmented reality to marry those things together. That is one thing that sets my work apart. It creates an interactive experience, and it's something different and unique that is desirable for a gallery. Now, I want to say that it's okay if you don't have something that's super unusual about your work. If your work is good quality, you will get noticed. But I will say, just keep an eye out on your journey for something that might set you apart. It's not something that you absolutely must have, but the more you go along in this journey and the more you learn about yourself and your work, the more you might be able to discover that there is something that's unique about you that sets you apart. But it's not the main thing. The main thing always is and always must be making good, strong work. That must always be the main thing. The augmented reality, the Morse code, whatever it is, must always be secondary to making really good work. If you've listened to the previous episode, then you'll know that I already had a bit of a relationship with this gallery. I'd been to lots of openings. I knew the curator, a lot of artists. I already knew that there was an alignment for me in terms of vision and value. So after asking a couple of clarification questions and sort of thinking about it for a week, it was a reasonably easy yes. So I said yes, and then I went into a bit of a panic because I was going overseas for about 5 weeks, and it was also the school holidays. So it was one of those moments where I knew that it was going to be a push for me in terms of time, but I also knew that this was something that I really wanted and it was an alignment. So I just had to pause and I just had to restructure what I thought the next 6 months was going to look like. I had to restructure my priorities and my time and basically just make it happen because I knew this was something that I really wanted. The next thing that I learned was to recognize the season that you're in and just be content with that. So I found out about the solo show and then basically went overseas the next week. And all I wanted to do while I was overseas was just get started. But I literally couldn't. I couldn't paint, and it was way too early for me to start working on the narrative and all the other admin stuff. So I had to just realize, you know what? I'm in a season of rest. If you try to be productive in a season of rest, it's not going to work. But at the same time, if you're trying to rest and you should be in a season of productivity, that's not going to work out well for you either. So just take a moment and realize what season are you in and just honor that. It might be different to somebody else's season. While I was on holiday, there was a whole lot of people that were like, we're just going to like go, 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 achieve our goals over the summer break. No, don't stop. This is what sets us apart. And I was kind of tempted to be like, yes, let's get lots of stuff done. But then I just paused and realized that's just not the season that I'm in. I'm in a season of rest. I'm going to honor that. I'm going to spend time with my family. I'm going to rest and recuperate because I knew that once I got back from a holiday, I was going to need all the energy that I could muster up. So when I eventually exited the season of rest and got straight into the planning, here were the things that I really paid attention to in the planning phase. Number one, and these aren't necessarily in order, was having different sizes and price points in my collection. And this turned out to be really important. With the economic climate right now, I knew that there wasn't going to be as many people who would be able to spend $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 on a painting. Now, I definitely included some larger works at that price point for sure, because those people are still out there. We just need to market to them. But I also knew that there was a whole bunch of other people who needed to enter the collection at a different price point. So I had small works from $175 all the way up to large works closer to $5,000. And having that huge variety of price points and sizes made my work super accessible to a wider range of audience. Suddenly, someone who walked in off the street and just happened to see something could make a $200 purchase without really needing to think about it. And somebody overseas who asked lots of questions and almost needed to go through an interview process before they spent $5,000, there was something for them as well. The other good thing about having different price points was that it really, the smaller works really got the ball rolling. So before the show opened up in the pre-release, I sold 10 works. Pretty much all of those works were smaller in size. They were an easy access point for people, and it got the ball rolling. It was amazing to be able to open the show and know that before we had even opened the doors, I'd already sold 10 pieces. The next thing I started to plan for was trying to create cohesion between the pieces without everything looking the same. This was really tricky. Because my work is quite similar, I had to think about how can I break up the colors and how can I break up the horizon lines and the compositions so that everything looks like it fits together without all being the same. So some ways that I did that was, again, color, breaking up the horizon line, and also introducing things like the circles, and some were on board and some were on canvas. In terms of the narrative or the story behind the collection, that was so important for me. And that sort of thing comes really gradually to me. I never really know exactly what the story behind the collection is before I start painting. I just start painting. And usually during the course of creating the collection, I have these sort of key experiences. Sometimes they're with people or they're with places, and all of these experiences slowly start to inform the eventual meaning behind the collection. For example, I was introduced to a new beach while I was making this collection, and I spent so much time in the water at this beach during this body of work. And as you can tell, if you look at the collection, the ocean and the tide and the colors of that particular place deeply informed the narrative and the feel of my collection. I also knew in the lead up that I wanted to use storytelling as a way to tease the show and market the show. So I worked with an amazing friend, Samuel, who him and his team, they did all the photography and all the videography for the show. Having someone help with the visuals of the show was hugely beneficial. It meant that I had really stunning photos and videos to work with, which made telling the story of the collection and all of that pre-launch marketing so much easier. I will say that it was an incredibly vulnerable experience. Having Samuel come to my home and come to my beach where I get all of my inspiration from and film the process, because nobody really gets to see that part of my process. Nobody gets to see my hair dripping in the paint. Nobody gets to watch as I'm filming underwater at my beach or while I'm just standing there soaking in the light. So it was an incredible privilege to have someone really capture my process and the narrative behind the collection. But it was also quite nerve-wracking, and I felt really nervous about it because I gave full creative control to Samuel. Because one thing that I love is empowering other creatives. I love creating space for other creatives to step into their zone of genius and not be limited by my instructions. So I really gave him full creative control. And the result was a lot of images with me in it, probably more than I would have wanted. But I trusted him and I used those images in the marketing of the show. And this was hard for me to do because, you know, I had that voice in my head. I was worried what other artists might think. I was worried that other artists would be thinking, oh my gosh, like another photo of her. Could we just see some art, please? But I just thought, you know what? If I go through this process constantly imagining what other people may or may not be thinking about me, it's not going to be enjoyable and it's not going to be authentic. I love photography. I love color. I love imagery. I love storytelling. So I just decided to show up just like that in the lead up to the show. So I was just authentically me. And it kind of made sense to me too. Like if we watch an ad for insurance, it's not just about the insurance. Most of the time, they're telling a story. They're telling a story about a humans, about a place, about relationship. And then at the very end, they're like, oh, by the way, this is an ad for insurance. And I kind of felt like I did the same. This collection was about moments. It was about color. It was about the beach. It was about the tide. It was about the poetry, about the story. So the photography and the videography played a really key role in me communicating the feel of the collection. but it took a little bit of courage, if I'm honest. Some other things that I kept in mind during the planning phase was how I was going to create an experience. I wanted an interactive experience. So obviously that's where the augmented reality came in. That's where the soundscapes came in. But I also had to be careful not to overdo it. At some stage, I was planning on how I was going to safely steal sand from the beach and have sand in the gallery. And my desire to make the exhibition interactive, I think I almost went overboard. So it was good to be able to just pause and go, actually, I think we've got enough going on here. We don't need to fill the gallery with sand. In doing something a little bit different, I really had to think about how I was going to onboard people to this new experience. There was not a single person that walked into the gallery that had actually experienced augmented reality before. So I really needed to think about how was I going to communicate to people what augmented reality is and how to interact with the art. The other thing I planned for was how to make the most of the time that I was in the show. So we had the opening night, which was obviously a lot of fun. I got a lot of people through the door. But then I also had these other events scattered throughout the 2.5 weeks. I had a live painting session and I also had an artist talk. And all of these events creates an opportunity for the gallery to email their list and to encourage people to come into the gallery. And what I learned here is that people care. When you're in your studio, it can feel like nobody really gets it or nobody really appreciates it. And this is why it's so important to immerse yourself in the artist's world and to be part of a community, is that when you are a part of a community and you get to see people interact with your work, you understand that there are people who care. I got to see people cry and gasp and ask questions and be genuinely interested in the work and the process. So planning intentionally to create opportunities throughout the show for that sort of human interaction was well worth the time and effort. Okay, marketing. Marketing took up a huge chunk of my thinking when it came to the planning of the show. I'm going to talk about marketing in a little bit more detail later on, but I think it's important to note that marketing isn't something that you do once the show opens. I had several phases of marketing that started way before the show actually opened, and I really had to be intentional and plan for this. Do not wait until your show is already open before you start thinking about marketing. It really is something that has to be kept in mind almost from the beginning stages. I want to pause here and chat a little bit about pricing. Pricing was something that I definitely had to plan for as well. And there was this real tension between not pricing too low because that would devalue my work and upset past collectors, but also needing to price to the market and to this new audience. So that I found that a little bit tricky, but this is where working in a team was super valuable. It was amazing to be able to have like really important discussions with the artists of the gallery and with the gallery staff and the curator, and be able to come to a place where I felt really happy with the prices, but also it was on point for the gallery's audience and their market. And I think there is a certain level of humility that needs to come when you're setting prices. And for me, it was really about setting myself up for success. I knew that I was new to this audience. So for me, I wanted this to be successful. And so I had my prices at a point where it was setting me up for success. And honestly, sometimes it was a little bit painful because I would look at paintings and I would think, oh, actually, I probably should have charged a little bit more for that. But sometimes there are things that are more valuable than money. Having a really successful show and getting my work into the hands of new people was incredibly valuable for me. Having a successful show, that exposure, those connections have been, after the show, incredibly valuable for me in bringing in more sales and more commissions. What were some of the challenges that I faced? The first one for me was time. because it was the school holidays and I was overseas, essentially I couldn't really start until February and the show was in April. So what this meant is that I just had to set realistic expectations and goals for the first quarter of the year. I had planned to do a whole lot of other stuff in that first half of the year, and I knew I just had to readjust. I just simplified right down. I had two key focuses for that first quarter of the year, and I just had to stay disciplined and focused. The other tricky part, like I said before, was the photo shoot and being vulnerable and just showing up as my authentic self and quieting that voice of what someone else may or may not be thinking. There just is not room for that. There is not room for us to worry about what someone else might or probably are not thinking. I just had to put one foot in front of the other and show up in a way that felt good to me. Now, something else that I found really tricky was finding a drink sponsor for opening night, mainly because I just didn't want to ask. This made me feel so uncomfortable, but I knew that it was important. I just had to be brave, approach different brands, put on my big girl pants, pick up the phone and just ask. And I'm so glad that I did. Manly Spirit sponsored my opening night. And since then, we've got a really cool relationship and we've actually got a really cool brand collab coming up in the future. So key lesson there, when you come up against those walls, those barriers that just feel uncomfortable, like it just felt so uncomfortable for me to pick up the phone and call them, that should spark you. Because when you hit up against that wall of discomfort, that means that you have now entered into the space of growth. You've entered into the space of increasing your capacity. So next time I need to approach a brand to be a sponsor, I am way more confident and I know way more what I'm actually doing. So whatever it is that you're doing, don't shy away from those moments that feel super uncomfortable. Just jump in there. Another challenge for me was space. I'm incredibly fortunate to have a studio at home, but it's not enormous. And this was a massive collection. I had 28 paintings. And it was really hard to fit those paintings in my house. And this was a real barrier for me. It sounds like a really simple problem, but it was a really big barrier for me because I hate clutter. And the idea of all of those paintings taking up studio space made me feel really anxious to the point where I was thinking, do I need to take one of the kids out of their bedrooms? Do they need to share so I've got a bigger space? Like it just, the thought of that many paintings in the studio really made me anxious. And then I just had to pause and think, okay, this is a problem that can be solved. I just have to think creatively here. So what is possible? No, I'm not going to kick my son out of his room so that I can turn into storage space for 3 months. There's another solution here. And it was actually really simple. Once I stopped focusing on the negatives and my studio space not being big enough for that many paintings, and I started thinking about, okay, what is possible? What do I need to do to make this possible for me? The solution actually came really easily. And all I did was I farmed my paintings out to all of my friends. I texted a bunch of people and I said, hey, can I store some paintings on your wall? And it was amazing. If that was you, thank you. I'm grateful. The next challenge that I had was onboarding people onto new technology, onto a new idea. Because the number one comment that I got from the gallery as people interacted with my work was, oh, wow, I've never seen anything like this before, which was a total kick. I loved that. But it meant that I really needed to guide people through the process of what augmented reality is and how to interact with my work. I had to think carefully. When people walk through the door, how was I going to let them know that it was an interactive show? What could I put in their hand that would make it super easy for them to download the app and engage with the artwork? So that was a challenge that I had to think through, and I knew I just needed to communicate that in lots of different ways. So I showed the augmented reality on my social media. I did lives. I had handouts that people got as soon as they walked through the door. I talked to the gallery staff, made sure that they were fully aware of how it all worked so that they could onboard people that walked through the gallery. I thought about which emails I needed to send when to make sure that everyone was prepared, knew about the interactive component, and had all the important information to really make the most of that interactivity. The next challenge that I had was working as a team. I love community and I love working with a team, but I was so used to just working solo, right? My last six collections have sold independently online, so I have done everything. So it took a bit of getting used to sitting back and allowing somebody else to have those client conversations and send the email. But what I will say is having somebody else take care of the packing and the shipping and the payments was amazing. That was so, so nice because I hate that stuff. So it was amazing to have somebody else take care of that. Okay, next I want to talk about how I marketed my show. Marketing was a massive focus. It was the thing that stretched my capacity the most, because I continually had to do things that I didn't want to do, but that I knew was necessary. And I think that's the difference between when you see yourself as an artist that's a hobbyist versus seeing yourself as a business owner. A hobbyist just does the fun stuff. It's a hobby. But as soon as you change your mindset and you see yourself as a business owner, you start to show up differently. So you start to do the uncomfortable things. You do the things that you know are necessary, even if you don't want to, because this is a business. It's so important to make marketing a large part of your planning, because there's so much time and energy spent into creating the work and the show. And then to have that fall flat simply because people don't actually realize that the show is happening is such a shame. So I started thinking about marketing very early on. So to start off, one of the things that I did is I made sure that my press release was written. I then did some research to all of the local newspapers and blogs and Facebook groups, and I sent my press release out to all of these magazines and blogs and whatever else. The trickiest part about this is that most of the time I didn't actually hear back. I've talked in a past episode about the importance of follow-up. So I would always send a follow-up email, but even then, most of the time, I still didn't hear back. But I know that sending out a press release worked, because there were a couple of times where people said that they saw me in a magazine and that's why they'd come to the show. Now, I have no idea what magazine that even was. They couldn't remember. But the point is that press is one of those things where it takes a lot of time and effort, and there's not a lot of return. Well, there is return, but you might not even realize what the return is. So my advice there would to make sure that you are researching all of your local contact points and making sure that you are sending them information that makes it easy for them. So that means your press release needs to be already written, beautiful images in the right format, articles pre-written. You want to make it easy for somebody to pick up your show and run with it. The other thing that I did is I got beautiful flyers and posters made up. I used Moo and I love Moo. The quality was amazing and it was actually pretty affordable. So I got flyers and about 2 to 3 weeks prior to the show, I started to put up posters in local places like cafes, libraries, market squares, that sort of thing. And I also had smaller flyers. The smaller flyers I put in cafes, and I also did a letterbox drop in the local area of the gallery. And the thing that made that flyer really work for me was two things. One, it was beautifully designed. So I utilized the amazing photos that Samuel took. And I had a QR code on there. Now that QR code linked straight to my Instagram, and it also linked to the web page that I made for the show. And on that page was all the information about the show, as well as a place where they could sign up to my newsletter to get a personal invitation sent to their inbox. And again, as I was sticking these posters up in toilet doors and all over the show, I didn't really know if it worked, but it did. I had several people say that they saw a poster in a bathroom, scan a QR code, and Now they follow me on Instagram, and that's why they came to the show. So all of these marketing efforts really helped to get new people through the door. So when it came to marketing, I was thinking about two people. I was thinking about getting new people through the door who I had not met yet. And in that regard, the posters, the flyers, the letterbox drop, the press release sent to magazines and blogs, that was really helpful. But I was also thinking about the audience that I did have and how I could prepare them and how I could build anticipation for the show. So that's where the little teaser videos came in really helpful. So for at least a month before the show, I started the storytelling of the show. I didn't reveal too much. I didn't show any completed works, but I showed little snippets. I just gave little teasers of the colors and the textures and a little bit of the narrative and the poetry connected to the show. And I just started to build a bit of anticipation. I personally plan out my social media sequence before a launch or before a show because we want to be really intentional. I was intentional about just revealing information bit by bit. But as I got closer to the show, I made sure that the information about things like opening night and pre-launch and how to get onto my email was really clearly communicated several times in my stories, in my posts, and also in my email. I can't stress enough how valuable it is to plan out your email sequence and to plan out your social media sequence, because when you're mid-show, like there's a lot of things happening. There's late nights hanging, things go wrong, the unexpected happens. So you don't want to be tired and having to think on your feet about which information to be sending out. Having your email sequence and your social media sequence already planned out just meant that I didn't have to expend extra energy I didn't have thinking about what would be the best post for that day or when I should be sending out my email inviting people about opening night. All of that was pre-planned, which just made it so much easier and less stressful. One thing that I trialed that I've never done before, but that I found really helpful, was making a landing page specifically for the show. A landing page really is just a page on your website that's specifically for the show. It's a place where you can send people when you meet them on the street or when they scan your flyer, where they can start to get information before the show opens. Once the show opens, you want people to have already put the date in their calendar. So I had this landing page, which obviously didn't include the catalog because the catalog hadn't been released yet, but it had the narrative of the collection. It had a video showing the story behind the collection. It had a couple of snippets of work so people could get a feel for the colors and the texture. And it had the times, the dates, the opening nights very clearly on the landing page. And also, most importantly, on the landing page, there was a section where people could fill in their email address to receive their personal invitation to opening night, to the show, and also get early access to the collection before opening night. I found this really helpful because as I was meeting people in the lead up to the show, I had somewhere to send them. Just right then and there, I just opened my phone. I said, oh, here's the page for the show. Do you want me to throw your email address in there and then you'll get sent your invitation? So having that landing page, a central place for all of the key information that I could send people in the month leading up to the show, I think really helped people be on board. It meant that on opening night, we had really great numbers and it was just a really great central place to send people. Some other minor things I did in the preparation was to update my Instagram bio, my Linktree, my highlights, a banner on my website, just to make it super easy for people to see the key information in the show and to let them know what was going on. Another really powerful strategy that I used, and I think I've mentioned this in a previous episode, is I sent a personalized message to my top collectors. I knew that if I had already sold work before the show opened, A, it would help me feel a whole lot better, but also it would get a bit of momentum and start the ball rolling with the shows. So what I did is I sent personal messages to my really loyal top collectors. And it wasn't a generic salesy message. It was really personal. It had their name in it, and the message was personal to them. I maybe mentioned that they were part of my first collection, or I mentioned their previous painting that they had bought. The messages were really personal, and I invited them to have early access to the catalogue before the show opened, just in the same way that the gallery would give early access to the people on their email list, to their top collectors. And that was a really powerful strategy. I messaged 10 people, and out of those 10 people, I think 9 had purchased work. So this is not a strategy that I would use all the time. I would not recommend DMing or sending personal messages to your collectors frequently. This is something that you use very, very sparingly, and only if you have that strong connection. If you've listened to me for about 5 minutes, you will know that I'm really big on heart-centered business. I'm really big on having really good connections with your collectors. So because I do a lot of storytelling and I really focus on connecting with my collectors, I had the strength of relationship that it was actually okay and appropriate for me to message them one-on-one, inviting them to be part of the pre-sale. I was a little bit nervous about doing this because, you know, you don't want to bother people, but all of them without fail said, thank you so much for giving me early access. Thank you for letting me know that this is coming up. And yeah, 9 out of 10 of them purchased work, which was really great for me to go into opening night knowing that I had already sold almost half of the collection. So all of the things that I've mentioned so far, this is all marketing that I did pre-show. Once the show started, I didn't let off. I had to keep storytelling, but I really shifted my marketing. So pre-show, I really was focused on building hype and anticipation for the whole collection. It was about coming to opening night. It was about the drink sponsors. It was about the interactivity. It was about the narrative behind the collection. Once the show started, I shifted my marketing more towards individual pieces of art because any show sells out one painting at a time. It was unbelievably rewarding, satisfying to see my marketing tactics work. So what I would do is I would pick one painting that hadn't sold yet, and I would really hone in on and focus on that painting over the next couple of days. I would just tell stories. Because here's the thing, I genuinely believe that each painting was created for a person. I believe that my paintings will connect with someone. As a marketer of my artwork, I don't need to be salesy. All I need to do is to give someone an opportunity to understand the work and make an emotional connection with that work. That's all I needed to do. So that's all I focused on. I focused on storytelling. I would pick a painting and I would just create space for someone to connect with that painting. I would do this by going into the gallery and going onto Instagram Live and talking about a particular painting through posts on social media, through video, and occasionally through email. And sure enough, that would be the next painting that sold. I think one of the really important things that I was reminded again through this experience was that it takes a lot of intentional hard work to sell our artwork. And I think I would be doing you a real disservice if I wasn't honest with you about that. I'm just going to be straight. Like, it was a lot of really hard, intentional work, but it is so, so worth it. One of the other things that I did that I think really helped was I created multiple experiences within the show to bring people into the gallery. There was opening night, which was packed, lots of hype, lots of fun. And then I also created other experiences that were a little bit more intimate. I did some live painting one Saturday where I just sat on the gallery floor and painted. This created an opportunity for people to come in and have more of an intimate experience. It was so beautiful. We just sat down and I talked about what I was doing. People were asking me questions. I asked them questions and had this real sitting around the campfire, having a yarn type of feel. And it was so beautiful. The other in-person event that I ran was an artist talk. I talked about my work and my experience, about the collection. And it was a chance for people to come and have a conversation with me a little bit more in depth than they normally would. And it was just another opportunity for people to connect with me and my work and the gallery. And I think having those three very different type of events just created more space for people to connect with the work and also for the gallery to reach out to their collectors, so that I knew that there were at least four times where the gallery reached out to their audience and reminded them of who I was and my work. So lots of opportunities for connection, which is what marketing is all about. Sometimes we think about marketing and it feels a bit scary or slimy, but what really helps me is to remember that marketing is just about storytelling. It's just about connection. When I think about marketing my work, I see my job just as creating space for people to see the work, understand the work, and make a connection with it. When you think about marketing like that, it's just a little bit less scary and a little bit less vulnerable, right? A little bit less feeling like you're trying to sell a car or sell a house. It's just about storytelling and creating space for. It's actually a really beautiful thing when you create something that you know has a meaning. You create space for someone to see it, understand it, and you see them connect with it. Having people come into the gallery and watch them just with tears in their eyes because they have connected on an emotional level with a piece of art, like, that is amazing. That was just an absolute privilege. It motivates me to market my work because it's not just about the money. It's not just about selling. It's creating an opportunity for someone to find a piece of art that helps them express a part of their story, that puts words and visuals and texture to who they are and to an experience that they have. When you start to see marketing through that lens, it becomes enjoyable and actually a privilege. Man, I could talk about marketing your artwork in heart-centered, authentic, relational ways for days. That might need to be a whole nother episode, but I really want to move on to a question that I have been asked a lot, which is, was it worth it? Was it worth it for me financially, emotionally, career-wise to work with a gallery? So I really want to hone in and answer that question for you. Before I move on to telling you whether the show was worth it for me, I want to tell you about my most downloaded free resource. It's called Story That Sells. It's a digestible but detailed workshop style resource that will help you build the kind of connection with your community that will turn them into loyal collectors who are excited to buy your work. I really believe that the success of my show was directly connected to the strength of my connections. So how do we build the kind of connection that leads to sales? It's storytelling. Telling clear, effective, and impactful story helps collectors connect with us and our work. And a lovely byproduct of that is sales. There is no way that I would be able to send 10 personal messages, 9 of which ended in sales, without really strong connections to my collectors. This resource is super practical. It's full of fun, practical prompts to help you discover your personal story and learn how to tell it in a way that builds authentic, beautiful connections that leads to sales. It even includes a free social media planning template that will make posting on social media finally feel doable and effective. It will help you discover your personal story and tell it in a way that creates connection, builds demand, and sell your work. Finally, getting clarity on my unique story and using story as my superpower to help collectors connect with my work has been an absolute game changer for me. And I'm so passionate about you guys getting access to that. So it's totally free. You can download it in the show notes, or you can just head straight to moniquestory.com/story that sells and download this resource for free. Okay, now let's jump into the question of, was it worth it for me? So for me, it was absolutely worth it. And here's why. My past 6 collections have sold out purely online. Just being able to really see people experience my work was a real blessing, and it was such a joyful experience for me. The other reason why it was worth it is because I got to learn from the gallery. I'm still very much learning. I'm not an expert that has everything figured out. I'm an expert in my tiny field, but the art world is so dynamic and there's so many different paths to it. So I got to learn from other people who were absolute geniuses in their field. I got to learn from the gallery staff. I got to learn from other artists who are way more experienced than me. I got to learn from the curator about hanging work and curating a show. I just got to rub shoulders with really amazing people who are incredibly talented at what they do, and I got to learn from them, and that was absolutely worth it for me. Now, I think what people are really asking me is, was it worth it for me financially? So I'm just going to tell you it all. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we sold roughly around $22,000 worth of my art in the 2.5 weeks that the show was open. So financially, it was definitely worth it for me. Obviously, of that $22,000, the gallery takes their commission. I found in the stage of life that I am in, paying the gallery that commission was 100% worth it for me, because they handled all of the payments, the packing, the shipping. And just for that, that was a massive bonus for me, because I genuinely hate organizing payment plans and packing and shipping. So to have somebody else take care of that for me was well worth the commission that the gallery took. So full disclosure, about 80% of paintings that sold during my solo show sold to my collectors, meaning that they were people that were connected to my social media or my email list or had purchased work from me in the past. Now, it can be easy to look at that and think, oh, well, in that case, it's not worth it to work with a gallery at all, because 80% of the paintings sold to people who are already connected with me. But it was still worth it for me for a couple of reasons. Number one, I got to leverage the community of the gallery. Working with the gallery meant that my work was introduced to a whole lot of new people, even if they didn't buy in this particular shop. Because I understand how art is sold. I understand that people go on a journey with an artist and their work before they buy. So a whole bunch of new people that are connected to the gallery have started their journey with me. They might not buy until later on, but I still have the gallery to thank for helping me begin that journey with those new people. And it's also worth noting that the success of a show isn't just measured in how many paintings walked out the door during the show. We sold about, 22 paintings during the show. But after the show, the gallery continued to promote me to people that walked through the door, because my catalogue is still in the gallery. So I think we sold about 6 more paintings after the show, just by people walking through the door, through subsequent group exhibitions, and through just a stylist walking through the door, seeing a catalogue and just requesting more work. So even after the show finished, I still got phone calls from the gallery saying, hey, do you have anything in this particular size or this particular colour? So I got to sell even more work through the gallery that I wouldn't have done if I hadn't worked with them. So was it worth it for me? Absolutely. For a couple of reasons. Introducing my work to new people that I wouldn't have found without the gallery. Learning from the incredibly talented people in the gallery. Seeing people experience my work in real life. Being able to make such a large collection. I think there were 28 paintings in the collection. There's no way I would create a collection that large without a gallery to actually house and sell my paintings in. And to be honest, just the relational experience of the show and being able to connect with the artists and the curator and the people, it was worth it for me almost just for that. But keep in mind that just because it was worth it for me doesn't mean that it might be worth it for you. It really is about you thinking, what are my goals? What's my capacity? What's my life like? What do I actually want? And is working with a gallery going to achieve that? I think that's the most important question. Okay, so to wrap things up, I really want to end with what were the main things that I learned throughout the process. Number one, I learned something interesting about myself. I learned that I actually love the in-person experience. I love being able to talk to people coming through the door and seeing people interact with my work. I loved working with the videographer and the curator and the other artists and being able to interact with others, see them operate in their zone of genius and learn from them. I loved it. And I think as artists, it's really important when we have an experience like working with a gallery or an art fair or a show or commissions to pause afterwards and ask ourselves a question. How did that experience make me feel? Did that bring me life? Because the thing about running an art business and having an art career is that there are so many different avenues of expanding and developing your art career. So it's important to pause and think, okay, is this something that I want to include in my career? Did doing that commission bring me life? If so, that's a little bit of a clue on how to shape my art career and moving forward. I want to have more commissions because that brings me life. Or how did you feel after that art fair? Did it absolutely suck your will to live? If so, scrap that. Now you've learned something about yourself and you won't include that in your art career in the future. I also learned the power of collaboration. Everything that I did was made better by including others in the journey. The more people we bring into our lives who are operating in their zone of genius, the better our work becomes. So I really got to experience the value of collaboration. The other thing I got reminded of again was that it's not easy to sell our work. Even if you work with a gallery, unless they are taking a really big commission and they are committed to doing absolutely everything, you can't just leave it up to the gallery to sell your work. It really is a partnership. So I had to do a lot of my own marketing and a lot of my own connections and really intentional decision-making to sell my work. I learned for the first time the power of a personalized message and DM, but only if you have the relational capital to back that up. One thing that I learned that I wish I had done better was leverage the opportunity just a little bit better in terms of publicity. I think if I had started my marketing publicity journey a little bit earlier on, I would have got even more exposure. Because the exhibition was so unique in terms of the interactive element and AR, there was a lot of opportunity for PR and publicity that I just didn't have time to make the most of. There was more opportunity for publicity than I had the capacity to take advantage of. So next time, I'd love to start earlier and get a little bit more traction in terms of publicity. Something else that I wish I had done was that I wish I'd created a sticker or something to go on the back of the artwork for people to connect with me post-show. So what I plan to do in the future is to have a sticker on the back of the artwork with a QR code, so that when someone takes the artwork home, they can scan the back of the artwork and that will connect them straight to my Instagram, to my website, to whatever. I would also love to, I just ran out of time for this, but I'd love to next time make sure that I have little business cards or little postcards that I can attach to artwork so that when people pick up their artwork or gets shipped, that they get a nice little paperwork package that kind of connects them to me in the future. So those are two things that I would definitely work on for the next show or for the next experience that I have. Well, I hope getting a behind-the-scenes look into my experience of my solo show has been helpful for you. And remember that if you are really passionate about discovering your story, learning how to tell it well in a way that makes deep and meaningful connections with your followers, that turns them into loyal collectors, make sure you check out that totally free resource at moniquestory.com/story that sells. Until next time, go and find your possible.
The best way forward is one step at a time. And by listening today, you just took one more step in the direction of your dreams. If you're looking for more, head on over to moniquestory.com. That's story with an E-Y. There you can get your hands on today's show notes and heaps of other free resources. Until next time, go and find your possible.